welcome to the AANS podcast. It's not brain surgery, the ANS practice and business management podcast. So with us today, we have really an esteemed leader in the field, Nick Theodore, and it's a real privilege to talk to him about his experience translating his ideas to technologies that have impact. Nick, thanks so much for coming on.
My pleasure. Great to see you, Eric.
Great to see you as well. Let's start with just tell us a little bit about your background, what you do on your day job, and then we'll really start to dig in as far as how you've gotten to really kind of work on some of your ideas and getting them to clinical practice.
Sure. Well, I'm at Johns Hopkins now and director of the spine program, and really on a daily basis could do what I've done for the last 25 years, which is take care of spine patients in every aspect of spinal care, spinal tumors, trauma, infections, whatever. And part of my mission here at Hopkins also is interacting with faculty and other specialties, especially engineering, and looking at how we can potentially take cutting edge engineering solutions and bring them into the operating room and how we make the practice of neurosurgery safer and better for our patients.
That's great. Now, maybe tell us a little bit about some of the experiences you've had as far as translating some of your ideas.
Sure. I think probably the thing I'm most proud of is the development of surgical robot, the Excelsius GPS system. And literally that started 20 years ago, and I was a resident. And we were just starting to use image guidance in spine surgery, and it was very frustrating, and it took a long time, and we were doing point-to-point registration, and people started it and abandoned it, and we really lost a whole segment of surgeons during that time because it was just too kludgy, too difficult to do. I really embraced it, and then when we started getting intraoperative imaging, it really made things a lot easier and stuck with it. And the question became, can we take that accuracy that we get with image guidance that we had been using in the brain since the very beginning of my training and automate that? Can we automate that process? And I'm partnering with, my best friend who's a biomedical engineer, Neil Crawford, was able to distill that aspect, taking the image guidance and then making it reproducibly automated through the usage of a robot. So what I will say is that people say, how long did that take? Well, literally, it was a 15-year, 17-year evolution until we got to the FDA. So these things take time and ultimately tenacity, and you have to stick with the idea and the concept and build a proper team and everything else. But it's definitely doable. And as neurosurgeons, we all have great ideas. It's the reality is bringing those to fruition takes time.
And maybe just for the kind of the audience, could you walk us through some of the highs and lows of that process and maybe some of the things that you learned along the way that you didn't know when you first started?
Sure. It's hard to hit the high points because it's a long process, but
right.
I think the most important thing is in your own mind, distilling what the idea is. What is it that you're trying to accomplish? What is it that you want to do? What is your idea? And again, every single day we're in the operating room, we all know how we could make things better. But taking that idea and what's happening in the operating room at that time and bringing it forward is the problem. So I think that from the very beginning, obviously, it's knowing what else is out there and really having an understanding in the world, through the internet, looking up through literature, medical literature, what's out there and what other people have done. Because as smart as you think you are and as forward thinking as you think you are and as innovative as you think you are, I can promise you somebody else has probably thought about it and somebody else has probably tried it. Maybe they abandon it, but it's having that understanding. I think one of the most important thing, I think, from the very beginning is having the right team with you to do it. I think when you're talking about highs and lows of the process, obviously it's a whirlwind and any sort of device development is ups and downs. But, from the beginning is building that team, having the intellectual property so that if you do get to that point, you are in a position where you can execute on the idea. And then ultimately, being able to sell that idea. And what I mean by that is to explain to others the merit. And really the most difficult people to explain this to, by the way, is not the venture capitalists and it's not the investors, it's your fellow surgeons, right? Because we're all the smartest guy in the room. And when you tell somebody you got this, like, yeah, I don't need a robot. I don't need this. I don't need that. I got it. So that's where the interesting part comes. So it's a process. I think probably one of the most frustrating was, I'll tell you, when we presented to the folks at Intuitive Surgical, I was very excited this day. We were presenting, to the 800-pound gorilla in robotics. And one of the medical directors of the company said, well, we have a robot. I said, yeah, no, I know. this is different. Yeah, but we have, you know, and again, there's a disconnect. So I was really excited to talk to them. And then when I left, I realized that they didn't have any concept of what we were doing. So it's a process.
Yeah, well, you know, I think one thing that you highlight that I think it's really important, because I think it kind of changes your perception of things, is that in my mind, and you articulate this, is problems are gold. That in some senses, when you first start really understanding in a very deep way, what is the problem that we're coming up against? And are, you know, clearly defining that so you can create that solution. And, you know, and I actually think that that becomes a very empowering process, because rather than just being like, oh, I'm a surgeon, I just got to grind this problem out, you identify a problem. And then that becomes kind of really the foundation for how you solve it. And that actually makes you excited to find a problem.
Absolutely. I think it was Albert Einstein that said, you know, if he has a problem, he'd spent 90% of the time characterizing that problem, figuring out what it is exactly, and then 10% on the solution. And I think you're absolutely right. What is it that you're trying to accomplish, and how do you articulate that, and how do you figure out what the scope of that is before you start thinking about what the solution is?
The second thing I think that you really highlighted that I think is worth just really bringing forward is that you have to convince a whole diverse population of people about your ideas, right? I think it's often the case that you have to come against surgical dogma, right? You know, just as in background, I've worked on neurotechnology and brain computer interfaces. And a lot of times the first thing out of people's mouths is like, this is crazy or this won't work, right? And I think I often find that that's a good indicator that you're on the right path. Right. Like, you know what I mean? Like that.
Or you're crazy.
Yeah. That's, yeah. Or that there is that.
And there has to be a little bit of that as well. No, yeah. You're absolutely right. And I think that in our specialty is rife with examples of this. And you look at Peter Janetta and you look at, you know, microvascular decompression. He was derided. People thought he was crazy. And there are a lot of examples in our field of how people started off with these ideas and that became done. Now, by the same token, sometimes our ideas don't work out, and you know, we hear less about those people too, but you're absolutely right. And I think it's, as you start exploring, at the end of the day, when you start, you know, everybody starts getting either worked up about it or whatever, they still have to be convinced, or they're still going to have to come along at some point. And then you're right, that's a process. So it's, I think communication and being able to articulate the problem and the goals as you talk to people across specialties and across educations and across experiences, whether it's venture capitalists, personal investors, medical device companies, or fellow surgeons, it's the ability to articulate, I think, it becomes crucial.
And maybe also just for kind of people who have not done this, what pearls of wisdom would you say, like for that early, early phase, maybe it's a resident, maybe it's an early faculty member who's kind of has an idea or is thinking about, you know, doing something that's translational or getting into the innovative or entrepreneurial space? What learnings that you would try to like imbue on that person that having now had, you know, like literally decades of experience that you would try to convey to them?
I think we don't work in a vacuum. And I think the reality is you need to talk to people and you need to find the best people for the problem, whether it's the best IP attorney or the best regulatory person or the best engineer or whatever. And these solutions are team approaches. You may have the idea. Part of the problem, I think, in surgery especially is that, you know, we tend to attract the prima donna, and that person who thinks he's got the best idea in the world will go nowhere unless that's executed by way of a team. And I think building that team is the most critical. So protect yourself first with intellectual property, but then start having conversations with people, and you have to talk, you have to get opinions and advice from people who have done this before, and then you have to really build the team. I think the best piece of advice, there's a book, and I'm looking at his first name, Robert Sutton, who's a Stanford business professor who wrote the book, The No Asshole Rule. With every company that I've started, that gets passed out as the company manual. And I've seen so many physician ventures fail because of personalities, because of ego, and because of just this hyperbole that goes along with some of our personalities and our specialty. What he talks about in the book is that one asshole, and I'm going to use that word because it's the title of the book, can disrupt an entire organization and can, you know, really sidetrack major companies and sidetrack any sort of business venture. So from the very beginning, it's building on that culture of working together and trust within the group that you build yourself. That's when you become successful.
I couldn't agree more strongly. And it is an interesting thing is that as a neurosurgeon, we are kind of trained in some senses as we grow in responsibility to kind of really be the person taking care of the patient, guiding the team, being the leader. But in this entrepreneur space, it's not about you, right? It's about how you can contribute value to a larger group and to execute on that. And so in some senses, we also really need to be humble to realize that there's all these other vertical skill sets, whether it be intellectual property, regulatory, business acumen, experience, like all that stuff. It really, really matters. And we have to really embrace that people know a lot of things outside of our domain of expertise.
Absolutely. And again, you have to also understand, just like you may be captain of the ship in the operating room, the anesthesiologist is still the one administering anesthesia.
Right.
The reality is that, you know, being a part of that team, you have to let go a little bit, and you have to let go about things that you don't know, and you have to be willing to learn. So, you know, people have asked me, well, you don't have an MBA. Do you need an MBA? You know, you don't need an MBA. My interest set is not in necessarily the nuances of the spreadsheet. I've got a CEO who's my best friend, who's the, you know, who's in this with me. That's how I learned. Trust me, and you know, I'm sure you say the same thing. You've learned enough to have gotten an MBA without ever having to get an MBA, as an example of one skill set. That same with intellectual property. And I'm not an attorney, but I can promise you, and actually having prosecuted 50 patents, the fact of the matter is that you learn along the way. Absolutely. Of what's important. So but you have to be willing to learn, and you have to get help and be humble through the process.
That's great. What are you most excited about for the future?
There are so many things on the horizon right now. One of the projects that we're working on right now is looking at micro ultrasound for looking at blood flow in the spinal cord after spinal cord injury. And circling back to my roots in neurotrauma, and how do we take care of the acutely injured spinal cord injury patient? There's been a dearth of innovation in that field. Every stem cell study has tried and failed. We've really gone a lot of different ways without any improvement. And so now, leveraging our experience here in engineering to see, is there a solution in the short run for the acute patient with spinal cord injury that we might be able to look at some of these engineering solutions? So that, among many other things, I think the neat thing is that the world, as complicated as it gets, all that means is that there's more technologies that we theoretically could harness and bring into our own specialty. We're all techies in neurosurgery, right? We have the best toys. We have the best devices. We have really, that's what's the most exciting about it. If you look at other specialties in surgery, you know, you've got the Jackson Pratt drain, you've got a retractor, but we really have so many amazing things. And that's what I think to me is the most exciting part of what we do.
Well, we're definitely tool users. And just parenthetically, I remember I was talking to a vascular surgeon yesterday about some technology we're working on, and I had to explain like surgical navigation. And he's like, wow, that's great. I was like, yeah. But like, you know, we do have a benefit of like having a lot of technology access that I think a lot of other specialties don't.
Absolutely. And I think for neurosurgery specifically, that's what makes it a very exciting specialty. And I think we're just scratching the surface. I think, you know, we're going to see in the next 10 years, so many different things that we didn't even think possible a year ago.
How do you think about it, thinking forward to the future from a resident standpoint? How should they prepare for the future?
So I tell the residents this every day. You have to become an expert in what we do every day. So you have to really throw yourself headfirst into the training. But from an early stage, with eyes open and seeing where there are possibilities. We have an interesting course here at Hopkins called Surgeoneering, where we take engineering students, bring them into the operating room. And it's amazing what, from an engineering perspective and a problem-solving perspective, what I learned, what they learned from that, from spending a few weeks in the operating room. It's unbelievable. By the same token, our residents have the ability to meet with the engineers and pitch problems to them in an iterative fashion. So it's really about having your eyes open. And if you're interested in that, if that's part of your ethos and part of your interest, whatever your specialty is, whether it's neurovascular or spine or endovascular or whatever, there is so much possibility. And it's just about having those conversations.
You know, I think one thing, you know, I absolutely agree, is that you have to become expert at what, being a neurosurgeon first. But with the willingness and openness, because I think neurosurgery residents are wonderful in that they can see what we take for granted at this juncture, right? And how we can improve.
You're absolutely right. At the end of the day, when I was looking at developing the robot, just as an example, part of the ability to do that is that I'm doing it every day. And when I told investors and when I told everybody else, well, I'm not building this technology for everybody else. I want to use it too. And I think that's that, having the skin in the game in that respect, being a practicing neurosurgeon, always being at the top of your game or trying to be at the top of your game, that sets the framework and the groundwork for being able to do these things.
I'd say the additional thing, and I think you've embodied this, but is you always want to be at the top of your game in neurosurgery. You want to learn it, master it, and then be willing to put yourself into either with friendships and relationships with like people who don't do what you do, and you learn from them, right? Like where you become the expert and you become the novice, right? Like at the same time, right? And being exposed and developing relationships outside of neurosurgery is fundamentally fruitful, I think.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it's a question of where are your friends? What do your friends do? And this is not just friend groups and everything else, but it's, you know, in this case, it is building relationships, which in my case, and I'm sure in yours as well, have developed into lifelong friendships. People you have tremendous respect for outside of our field, tremendous trust in, and who you can work together with on these projects. And that, again, has to do with building the team and making sure that those teams function on a level playing ground and taking egos aside and really coming together for the common good or whatever the project is at the time.
I think that's right. Well, I think we're kind of coming to the end of the time. I think that first off, thank you very much for taking the time to kind of really, you know, share some of your background and your experiences. I think that these are things that people need to hear so that we can really both advance our field and advance the experience that we can have as leaders in neurosurgery.
Absolutely. Thank you, Eric. I appreciate the opportunity.